I'm Jason Klom, and this is Comedy on Vinyl. Album Mel Brooks's History of the World Part 1, dialogue and music from the original motion picture soundtrack, the artist Mel Brooks. My guest this week is Eric Paparozzi. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So I said we'd do it at the end, but we should just talk about how we know one another. We've met through the Rarefied Air podcast that I sort of sometimes co-host with Josh Mills. It's supposed to be there every time. But you produce it, you edit it, you do the mixing, you deal with a lot.
Right. It's been a fun project. And, you know, for many reasons, not the least of which I got to know you, although I've heard of this podcast before I started working on our podcast, Rare, which is cool to finally cross paths with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the Josh thing is, you know, it's an extension of my love of comedy, because, you know, there's a lot of funny elements to what Josh does on that show and what you and Josh bring to it, and your collective knowledge of pop culture and weird oddities and Mondo Hollywood and the whole thing. It all kind of makes sense with this thing called a career that I'm piecing together.
I mean, you've got also, it's not like you don't have an impressive number of comedy things in your own resume, though. You name a few of the comedy things that you've produced or worked on.
My main comedy work has been with the artist Neil Hamburger, in working on his musical act for about the past 6 years or so. I've been accompanying him whenever he does something musical, which at this point in his act, he tends to like to add a song or two to sort of make it fresh for him and make it more of that sort of old school comedian vaudeville style, you know, like he's a comedian who came up the hard way and, you know, he's worked every joint from here to, you know, Toledo and back. And it just kind of goes with that character. And then that evolved into, I produced an album for him called Still Dwelling, which I'm really proud of, because we were really going for the sort of 1969 Wrecking Crew sound, which is like highly specific. And you know, to replicate a celebrity vocals album, which I think we did pretty well, and he picks great songs, and you know, I think he's one of the best vocalists I've ever worked with. You know, he's got sort of a unique delivery, but it's very powerful, especially if you're on stage with him and trying to be the straight man while he's like possessed by his persona up there and the music. And he's really, I feel like when I'm on stage with him, I feel as though I'm, you know, a boxer who stepped in the ring with Muhammad Ali, who you have to rise to that level of experience that he brings to his. I just love the character. It's very meta, and it's just right up my alley. So that came along. That really is a good use of my weird knowledge and and skills. I played all the instruments on that. Through Neil Hamburger, I ended up doing a song for Tim Heidecker called Eulogy for Neil Hamburger. And he reached out to me via email, which was like a real pleasant surprise to open up your inbox and see, would you like to give this song I wrote one of your classic huge arrangements? And yes, I do. And so that happened. I got roped into doing a live show with Margaret Cho once, which was a pretty funny story. I'm old friends with this guy Michael Jorgensen, who has been in the band Wilco for like the past 20 years, and she's a huge Wilco fan, and she was putting a band together, or she asked Michael to put a band together for this Wiltern show, and he thought of me. And the concept was, she kept, she, there was this long story in her act about, can we speak freely here on this?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, she had a bit about her, these are her words, her fat pussy. and, you know, it was a thing. She kept coming back to it, you know, and, it was really funny. And then, her set ends, and then the band was set up behind a second set of curtains, and the curtains come up, and we learned a song, an original song of hers called Fat Pussy. And so we did Fat Pussy, and it was great. It was like this like really unexpected treat for the crowd, except it was a little weird because that day Nelson Mandela passed away.
Oh my God.
And you know, Margaret's you know, an activist as well, and that's great. And we all get this flurry of texts saying, you know, you guys, I have to recognize this in some way, and I'd like us to do Free Nelson Mandela, the song from the 80s. And so I just don't know if it hit the correct note because, you know, here's her comedy show. Uh-huh. Then we come out for Fat Pussy. And then she's like trying to get everyone up and, you know, doing this repeating Free Nelson Mandela song. I don't know if the crowd thought they were supposed to be laughing at it or what. It was a little odd. I mean, I don't, what do I know? I wasn't in the crowd. Maybe it was a huge success and a big statement. I don't know, but
wow,
that was her call, and we all just went there with her.
I just love that. Yeah, as you point out, like, you're brought in when you are a musician who is brought in to, you know, genuinely do your thing, you know, and make the sound as big or as accurate as possible. You are playing the straight man, as you say. It's a high honor in terms of comedy, but also it's the hardest job. Straight man is always the hardest job.
It really, really is. So, and then just to finish off my little comedy resume, I've been doing with this composer David Steinberg, not the comedian, but the composer David Steinberg. We do the music for the last four RuPaul Drag Race Rusicals, which, you know, I was not educated into as to how big a phenomenon this scene is.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fans take it very seriously when a new Rusical comes out. And we've been having so much fun with it, but it is a real pressure cooker. Writers, there's producers, there's, you know, all sorts of, you know, chiming in. But the music is on us to do. And we have to play it straight. We really do, musically. You know, if we're doing, in the Madonna one, there was like an Evita thing, and you have to play it big. You have to do a big Evita show tune thing, and then it's on the queens to bring the comedy. And I have to say, they are hilarious, every single one of them.
Right.
It's really, really a great scene to be a part of because, you know, the writers are incredible, and then we do our thing. But then once you hear it sung by these drag queens, it just takes it into this place where you could have never imagined it.
Some of whom have voices I wasn't expecting either. Some of those voices are fantastic.
Oh, I know. Incredible, incredible. So yeah, I guess that like comes with the territory. So
sure, yeah. I mean, you know, that's remarkable. Boy, oh boy. How long has music been in your life? It's not always, you know, because I mean, sometimes comedians are like, yeah, well, I picked up comedy at a certain time, but music always feels like it's omnipresent, like you never didn't have it in your life for musicians.
That's so true. That's so true. Well, my family is musical. Mm-hmm. Everyone on my dad's side, pretty much. Mm-hmm. My aunt didn't pursue music, but everyone else picked up an instrument. My dad's a great singer. He plays guitar. And my uncles had a wedding band, mm-hmm. Forever. And they would let me tag along. And it was always definitely a major part of the environment that I was growing up in. And I started gravitating towards instruments around age 5. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about this show that we're doing now and all the comedy records that I started getting into. And it was happening at the exact same time for me, where mm-hmm. I was hearing comedy on vinyl, mm-hmm. and I was hearing music on vinyl right around the same time. I remember around the time I started really delving into music, which was like Beatles and Hendrix, and all my parents' collection. My parents had the Saturday Night Live album, mm-hmm. The cast, you know, and it had yep. Fluckers Jam and all that stuff. And it was great. That blew my mind. And then two different aunts. One had Woody Allen, the stand-up years. Yep. Mm-hmm. And the other aunt had Steve Martin, Let's Get Small. I think she had a Wild and Crazy Guy, which had the 8x10 inside of mm-hmm. him that says Best Fishes, Steve yeah. Martin. And there's a fish stuck inside his suit. So this was all happening right around the same time for me, where comedy albums were just as important as music albums were. Mm-hmm. Around 5, I would say. 5,
okay.
6 years old.
That's younger yeah. sometimes, I would say, than some people get into it. What do you think is the first time then you heard, this is going to be hard to nail down, but the first time you heard comedy music? I mean, Steve Martin would have been doing a little bit of that in his act, but.
Right. Comedy music. That's a good question. The Ruddles was huge for me.
Oh,
huge.
Yes, of course.
But that probably didn't come until, you know, I was born in 71. That came out, what, like 76 or something? Mm-hmm. And then I probably heard it at around age 10 mm-hmm. or so, something like that. I was in a record store. And with one of my aunts, and you know, from an early age, I was always flipping through the bins, and then I pull this thing out that looks like a Beatles album, except it's called The Ruddles. And I knew enough about the world of comedy to put together that, okay, this is gonna be funny.
Yeah.
And I bought it, and you know, just like the album that we're gonna be discussing, mm-hmm. I knew it way before I knew the movie, mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe that was a big one for me. The Ruddles, you mm-hmm. know, as far as like music meeting comedy goes, my dad was a fan of early Zappa. So, mm-hmm. That was all kind of flowing around and entering the fray. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the weird thing about this that I guess I sort of had forgotten to write down in advance. Did you pick up the History of the World record before you watched the movie, or was this something that was in the house?
Yeah, so this is the story, is that, so it came out in 81.
Yeah.
And that means I was 10. Mm-hmm. I was not allowed to see rated R movies. Sure. It wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I was obsessed with the commercials for this movie. It just I had to see this movie. You know, there was the scene that like really is burned into my brain is they're in Roman times and a dude walks by with a boom box and it's blasting Funky Town by Lips Incorporated, mm-hmm. I'm just going, okay, this is my kind of movie. I need to see this. And my grandmother was like a bit of a hoarder, shopaholic kind of person. And she loved going to these like discount stores. And in New Jersey, where I grew up, we had two guys. We had Bradley's and we had James Way. And she was, you know, VIP at all these stores. And she would, I would spend a lot of time with her. And I would go into the stores and I would just make a beeline for the records department. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, I mean, this has been my life this whole time since then. And I just, you know, I get a lot of comfort in the record aisle of any store. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I'm like, you know, feeling really bad that I'm not allowed to see this movie. And then I'm flipping through at one of these stores, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm holding this up to the camera here, but this is my original copy, mm-hmm. when I was 10, and I got the record. And the record, I don't know if you were able to listen to the thing I burned. It's not on YouTube.
Yes, thank you.
This does not get a lot of play on the internet.
I'm
There's
shocked.
Hardly anything about it. I even tried like researching it to prepare for this show, and there's really not even much written about it.
No.
So anyway, I'm looking at this, and it was my, you know, life hack at 10 years old to be able to experience the movie, you know, by way of listening to it. And it was years before I ended up seeing it on cable. And to be honest with you, it didn't add up to the experience I had of knowing it through this record. And I just listened to it again today just to totally refresh myself, although I know every word and beat and nuance of it.
Of course.
But man, this thing was just as good. And of course, it's completely peppered with, you know, curse words and you know, all sorts of, you know, scatological humor that was the reason it was rated R. And you know, it didn't make a difference that I was hearing it instead of seeing it. You know, my brain was being corrupted by the record. But
were you listening to this thing with headphones at home? Because I have to assume if your parents heard you listening to this.
Yeah, I must have been. You know, doing it, you know, on the DL. But yeah, it is hilarious. And hey, what about the timing of us having this conversation?
I know.
On the heels of our dear Cloris, you know.
I know.
So R.I.P.
I know.
Cloris. The best, Leachman.
So good. There is what's the moment in, oh, now I've already forgotten, where the joke, she mispronounced, she's doing there's the whole bit about we're doing these crazy accents, we sound like Maurice Chevalier, but then she says some word in the wrong accent. She just says France, and they're like, France, I think. And she's like, France, like, shift gears. Holy crap. This is a woman who, by the way, I didn't know this, but I saw somebody who started out as a model and just said, fuck it, I want to act. I'd rather act. And then ends up being the funniest woman on the planet. Holy crap. It's remarkable. Remarkable.
I know. So, yeah, she's all over side two of this album. But, you know, and I had no idea. I really didn't know. I didn't know a lot of the references.
Of course.
First of all. And I didn't know a lot of the actors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really just, you know, hearing this as a sort of a radio play, and I'm imagining it all. And the beautiful thing is that now when I listen to it again, it's all sort of a combo of what I thought it was and then now what I know it to be. Mm-hmm. But I prefer this as a radio play, drama, you know, whatever, to the movie, which, you know, I of course I love the movie, but
sure, but
this just is very, very near and dear to me.
Of course,
and,
it is. Yeah,
and of course, let's not forget the inner sleeve, yes. Merch opportunity, posters and t-shirts, the full color poster, $4, and the t-shirt, which, man, how Come great on. Would it be to have a History of the
like
World?
Like an original one?
Holy original crap. T-shirt.
Yeah.
$8. Youth size is $6.
It's so
oh
good.
Oh, my God.
Because they know kids are going to buy this damn thing. Come on now. They wouldn't be selling youth sizes if they didn't know little Erics yeah. were going to be convincing their grandmothers to buy them.
Yeah. I know. I know. I really... I should have sent away for one, but... yeah, that would have been... That would have needed a level of covert that I wasn't equipped for.
Was this then your first experience with Mel Brooks, too, period? It
yeah.
just looked like a funny movie to you?
Yeah, definitely. I remember wow. my aunt... My one aunt was very, very influential to my taste in music and movies. And I remember her telling me about the scene in High Anxiety mm-hmm. where... they're doing the psycho scene and with a newspaper and it's the ink running down.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm just like imagining, oh my God, that must be so funny. But that was my only other experience with Mel Brooks before I had this. And then cable TV came along.
Sure.
And then just sort of like all bets were off and,
uh-huh.
you know, anything I saw that had Mel associated with it was definitely... consumed on multiple viewings.
I wish I'd have thought to do what you did, because my parents wouldn't let me watch they didn't care about rated R, but specifically Blazing Saddles. I think they were like, you're not going to get the irony of any of this. Let's wait till you're 16 before you're allowed to watch it. I think it was 16 before I saw it.
Wow.
Before I could handle it. And they weren't wrong. They were not wrong. I don't think I would have been like, why are they saying that word so many times? I wouldn't have gotten it. There's no doubt in my mind. This yeah. so like this is not also we should talk about how unusual this is. This is not the kind of record. I won't say they don't exist, but because every once in a while you'll get a full soundtrack record with a clip in it. Like the Hot right. Fuzz record has little clips from the movie, but mostly music.
Right.
But this is obviously full extended sequences and intermixed with full extended score pieces.
It's true. So yeah, it's basically at least half the movie. I mean, each side mm-hmm. is 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, it starts off, side one is History of the World theme, then Moses. It's the entire
mm-hmm.
Moses sequence, then the Roman Empire, then the Inquisition. And then, of course, you know, the great thing about it is the music mm-hmm. on this record and in the movie is just off the charts, as good as anything that would be in any Hollywood musical. And
the Inquisition is a perfect piece of music.
It's a perfect piece of music.
And
actually, yeah, no, sorry. I was just going to say, I realized listening to this today that this music was extremely influential to the arrangement work that I get into on Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to do a lot of show tune-y type stuff. And this is just kind of a masterclass in how to arrange music and be funny, because a lot of the backup singers are, you know, you know, will you say yes? No, 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 no. You know, it's just perfect. Yeah. So yeah, I can't think of another, you know, quote unquote soundtrack that's basically just the movie.
Right. I mean, the only other one I can think of is honestly the Young Frankenstein soundtrack. That's the only, because they do roughly the same thing.
Oh, okay. I've never had that one.
That's it. Yeah. Because I once read Simon Pegg's autobiography, and the way he words it in his book is that it's the entire movie on a record. And I think it must be a typo. It has to be what I have, which is that, but Young
You're
Frankenstein.
Right.
I can't imagine. Now, if that exists somewhere, please someone send it to me or tell me about it, because I want it. But yeah, this is all I know about these two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, like I'm saying, I know this so well that it mm-hmm. actually ends up being a pretty disorienting experience for me to watch the movie.
I bet.
Because I'm like, wait a minute, that's not on the record. You know, there are several scenes and a lot of dialogue that had to get cut, I guess, just for timing wise. But I prefer the record, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, they also, so they got to cut out visual bits. They've got to cut out, you know, moments of just pure physical acting. They've got to cut it down to the best dialogue jokes and the most obvious sound effects. And then, of course, the best music. So, yeah, it's so much has got to go. And I'm sure even in the scenes, there's so much is chopped out.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Do you, is there a... You know, Mel Brooks is somebody who grew up on, not just on musicals, but living in New York and getting to go to musicals. Did you have that experience a lot as a kid or no? No,
not at all. In fact, I don't really respond to a lot of music from musicals.
Okay.
I liken it to, you know, religious music. I didn't grow up religious, but I've been to church plenty of times, and I've, you know, had girlfriends and whatever, where you end up in these situations where you're at church, mm-hmm. and you know, it's like, okay, everyone open the book and let's sing a song that we've never heard before, mm-hmm. and it's very clear to me that the song was written to accommodate the lyrics, which mm-hmm. I'm like, to me, just as a weird music guy, lyrics have always just been a vehicle for the melody.
Interesting. Like
I barely ever even pay attention to music. One time I had to sing Hey Jude, mm-hmm. you know, for an event. Then I open, I've heard that song a million times. Okay, here we go. Hey, wait, how does, what are the words? I don't know the words to this song. So I just like, they really like don't stick on me. So anything that I can like, you know, sniff out was written with the words first, mm-hmm. always rubs me the wrong way, and that applies to musicals and it applies to religious music.
Yeah,
I just like, I can't get with it. But now, especially on the RuPaul stuff, you know, we get the lyrics first, and then we have to, fashion a song around it, which is, and I really do enjoy the challenge when it's put to me. In this way, I'm like, okay, I can roll with this. And mm-hmm. and actually, there's been two original Neil Hamburger songs where he'll send me a set of lyrics, and I have no idea where he's going with that. And,
yeah.
I think, okay, well, you know, let me just see where this can go, and that is fun. But that was a long way of saying musicals don't really factor into my my education
right.
as far as being a musician goes.
What are you channeling then? The few musicals you are aware of, or is there some, what are you working with?
I think I'm
with?
Channeling this. I swear to
okay.
God.
Okay.
I'm listening to it again today, like all the songs, you know, I really look at this writing and arranging as, mm-hmm. Like I said, just a masterclass of how to have a show tune that's mm-hmm. especially one that's funny. I've never had to write anything serious in that way.
Sure. Or
with that in mind, but not against it, but anyway, sorry, I think I just lost my train of thought.
That's what happens, especially if you dig and make somebody talk about their process. Sometimes it's like, I know my process, but I'm not used to telling you what the hell that process is. I get it. You know, I mean, doing that in somebody giving you the lyrics, I'm pretty sure like that's the exact same process that John Morris had to do writing all the music for this, which I'm assuming, I know Mel Brooks usually is the lyrics man and he hands it off to somebody else, but you know, like I'm pretty sure John Morris was given everything and like, okay, here we go. Let's do something that sounds. And although again, Mel Brooks was probably like, hey, I really love this show. Can you give me a little bit of taste, a little taste of this? And John Morris could just do it in his sleep. But you know, and also, so one of the Rusicles is Rats, obvious parody of Cats. Did you do any, like, what did you have to do a general dig into my brain is Andrew Lloyd Webber. Did you have to dig into him a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. definitely did a little digging, mm-hmm. and you know, I don't. This may be just a bit of laziness cop out, but you know, my way of rationalizing is it is as you know to sort of be. Well, I know enough. I don't want to know too much. Mm-hmm. You know, that I want to be, you know, a little pure about this. And, you know, of course I'll listen to, especially if it's a, you know, a parody or a vibe alike, as they say in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course I'll listen to it, but I really try to just like get an impression and yeah. not try to overanalyze something. I'm mostly listening for the arrangement, what the instrumentation is,
mm-hmm.
You know, how they're voicing, you know, the band and the orchestra. So,
I mean, there's a good argument to be made for why that makes the most sense, because I feel like some people, especially if your brain is a certain way, if you do dig in too far, you're unavoidably maybe the kind of person who'd be like, well, I just wrote a parody. Like, that's all I can do is write a parody. Like, if you dig into it too much, maybe just having that surface knowledge of it is exactly what makes the most sense, you know, at least for you.
I tell myself that.
You know, I'm that way though with writing satire too, where it's like, you know, I wrote a book that was a satire of political manifestos. Do I want to sit and read all of the book that John Kerry and John Edwards wrote when they were, you know, campaigning for president in 2004? Not really. And so I didn't. I barely read any of it and realized I didn't need to. I wrote a book that was a fake history of the internet, and I bought $100 worth of old internet books from the 90s. I barely flipped through them because I knew what I wanted. I already knew what I wanted just by grazing. So I don't know. I think it's a perfectly legitimate approach. It is, but I also get it's like, was I being lazy or did I just get what I needed? I totally get that too. That impulse makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and also honestly, in that regard, or I should say on that specific job,
mm-hmm.
it's a real time crunch. I can't stress that enough. Like the workload is like very, very heavy and with not a lot of time mm-hmm. to pull off, you know, some like a huge medley
mm-hmm.
With genre hopping and, you know, trying to get it just right and teaching the singers all that.
Do you have so you originally said, you know, when you got this record, you weren't really, again, not that familiar with some of the references at the time, but not familiar with a lot of the actors. Did it make you a fan of these actors, or are they still sort of separate in your brain as just like these characters from this record?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say that, you know, we already talked about Cloris. She's mm-hmm. amazing. But, you know, Orson Welles narrates this, and I didn't know who Orson Welles was at the time.
I'm sure.
Obviously like a huge fan of his. Gregory Hines is amazing. Mm. Dom DeLuise is great. I was listening today to The Inquisition
mm-hmm.
and there's a great verse that they give to Jackie Mason.
Yes.
You know? And he's like, you know, being Mr. Super Jew.
Uh-huh,
you know, yeah. Suddenly this guy's breaking down my balls.
It's such a good bit.
I didn't even know them, but they grabbed me by the scrotum. You know, it's all, by the way, I mean, just to, if we can state the obvious for just a
second. This is also a masterclass in Catskills Borscht Belt comedy. Oh, and
still holds up.
There's, you know, even, what's the gag? He just came from performing at Mount Vesuvius. I love a mountain comic. Isn't that the gag? If I'm not mistaken, so stupid.
I mean, that whole thing is great. He's a stand up philosopher.
Yes, so brilliant.
Know? Oh, a bullshit artist. Did you bullshit today? Did you try to bullshit today?
Oh God, B. Arthur, such a good cameo too. So good.
I know. They're all so great. Yeah, you know, oddly enough, I don't know why. I think I just somehow or another inherently knew that nothing could get better than History of the World Part One. So I really until very recently did I even bother to check out Spaceballs
mm-hmm.
I never watched Robin Hood Men in Tights. I've never watched what even came after that?
Is it after or before? Well, he did a movie called Life Stinks, which is just also not that great. I'm not a fan of Robin Hood Men in Tights, but I think the last one he did that is the most Mel Brooksy is Dracula Dead and Loving It. Which
never saw it.
You're not missing anything. There's one scene that's pretty funny. And there's a bunch of people who are very good in it, but it just doesn't come together as a whole film. Not to insult my absolute hero, Mel Brooks. I think he might admit it himself. But yeah, and I mean, even Spaceballs, I was just the right age for it, but I've since been like, okay, that's something I liked when I was eight. You know, I'm not so sure. I don't know if it's a great movie.
It may even be that this is not a great movie, but it is a great album.
Oh, it is a great album. Yeah, there's, and I think it is his last, also partially because of the epic scale of it, which you can hear just as well as you can see, I think.
Yeah.
I think because of that, it's like that's the last great of a very particular era of just a few films, really. Just a few films. And I love everything he's ever done, but, you know, there's that period that is just kind of perfect.
It's funny because it was making me remember that right around this time there was a movie called Holy Moses. Uh-huh. Now I was a big Arthur fan.
Sure.
So Dudley Moore loomed very large in my world, in my mm-hmm. childhood, and Dudley Moore was in it. I think Richard Pryor was in it, maybe mm-hmm. like James Coco. Like, it was kind of a poor man's History of the World.
Okay,
part one. I don't know if it came out before or after, but it
just a year before, like, it looks like.
Okay, maybe John Ritter, was he in it?
Let's see. Yes, yeah, we got Dudley Moore, Lorraine Newman, James Coco, Dom DeLuise, Madeline Kahn, Richard Pryor, John Ritter, and a bunch of other people. Holy cow.
Right, sounds great. But I also just feel like I think there was like a movement of like these historical comedies.
Sure.
That was happening around that time. So it wasn't that good, but I thought it was worth mentioning in this discussion.
Yeah, you know, I think I knew very little about it until you mentioned it. I'm also a massive Arthur fan. I've been looking for an excuse to talk about that soundtrack, which is not a funny soundtrack, just to talk about that movie.
It's an amazing soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's one of Burt Bacharach's, I think, coolest sounding records. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think about that soundtrack a lot. Actually, it's funny you say that, because on the Neil Hamburger album, we do a very sort of, I don't know how to describe it, but we're doing this sort of like late era Wrecking Crew version of Homeward Bound.
Yeah,
kind of like we wanted to pick one of those songs that turned up on every Celebrity Vocals album,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
Michelle or something, you know, like one mm-hmm. of these like huge hits that you know, every Bing Crosby to, you know, Telly Savalas and, you know, whatever celebrity vocalist record was coming out, usually had like these staples on it. So Homeward Bound, and also it worked lyrically for Neil Hamburger, always traveling. But I definitely, for the bridge section, I was really referencing the Arthur soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
So
good. What is okay on this soundtrack then? It's hard to even call it just a soundtrack. On this record, do you have an absolute favorite track?
Well, I definitely, when I was listening to it again today, I definitely prefer side one,
mm-hmm.
which is Moses, the Roman Empire, and the Inquisition. Probably, I gotta go with the Inquisition.
Yeah, same here.
It's just so perfect. But the Roman Empire is, I know it by heart. And but then I was also, God, it's just all so perfect. Mm-hmm. It's just so perfect.
What's interesting is like you
the
have
French Revolution.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh no, you have the same opinion of this that I have of the Monty Python sketches, where I love the albums more than I love the show, and I love the show fine, but the albums to me are
perfect. They are Python record sketches perfected, and there's something to be said for that. Again, there's the whole imagination.
Are they sketches that either originated from the show, or is it the actual audio from the show?
There is one record that is the actual audio from the show and therefore sounds as you would expect. And then there are all the subsequent records are either original sketches or they are recreations of the ones from the show. So the ones that are recreations, it's like, oh, we had the opportunity to perfect it because we don't have to deal with video and we've got better sound equipment. We're only dealing with sound. I harp on this a lot, but people should listen to those and then keep in mind that a 17-year-old boy is producing them. After once you get to their third album, that kid was 17 years old. He's a friend of the show, genius, an absolute genius. And when you keep that in mind, it's like, how the hell is this even possible? They're perfect in his shed, in his mother's shed in his backyard. That's where he started out editing the Monty Python records.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, you're reminding me of, I figured out that the National Lampoon albums were able to be taken out of the library where I grew up.
Oh, okay.
And I would, you know, just because I was always drawn to comedy albums, I would bring those home, and they did a great job. Oh, yeah. Although those skits were specific to the records.
Sure. I always ask people, I feel like you might have one of the better arguments for why to listen to a record in a while. So why give this this album a listen? Maybe the person doesn't know who Mel Brooks is. Maybe they've never seen the movie. Why give this thing a listen?
Jeez. Well, gosh. You've stumped me.
I know.
I would say that this album is a fun listen because it's all the best bits of the movie, you know, conveniently chopped up into bite-size little snippets here and easy to digest. And it just flows really well.
I mean, here's the thing. I will say you've made a good argument for it already. You've already said you prefer it to the movie, and I think that's interesting.
I do.
I love that perspective. I don't know. I think that's great. I love hearing that.
It's really fun, and it's really evocative. I didn't feel that I missed out on anything.
Yeah.
By not seeing the movie as a young lad who was like dying to see the movie. I got this, and it was exactly what I needed. I almost wonder if they did it for that reason, now mm-hmm. that I think of it. I wonder.
Just because kids for whom a lot of this humor is going to work might be able to nab the record and not go see it wouldn't be able to see the movie.
Yeah. Well, and on that note, mm-hmm. you know, I think I emailed you about these. But
yes.
You know, so I was in Italy in 1999. I have like a lot of family over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being the record
freak that I am, I always, you know, can
zero in on where the records are hiding in any town.
Sure.
And, you know, we were sightseeing one day in this little town. And I could tell that there was going to be some records in this store. And this blew my mind for people who aren't getting the visual right now. What I'm holding is a 45 of an Italian pressing of Mel Brooks' It's Good to Be the King rap, which, you know, it's broken up onto two sides, mm-hmm. part one and part two.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm getting this. There's no question about it.
Of course.
And it was like, very inexpensive, but yeah, it was like it was like a junk shop, you know, like buried under some Italian crap.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, so this like put it on the radar for me, and then, you know, just digging around the thrift stores, I found the 12-inch version.
So great.
Again, part one and part two. I listened to it today. It's really, you know, it's, well, let's just put it this way. It's the Mel Brooks rap that you didn't know you needed or wanted.
Right. Yep. Absolutely right. And worth pointing out that 2 years later, for when he does his remake of To Be or Not to Be, he does a Hitler rap that was that was basically probably the same song. But
that's right. And I think I have that as well now that you mention it. That's right. That's right. That's right. So, I mean, I guess I bring it up in reference to what we were just talking about. Like, why do these things exist? Mm-hmm. Like, who greenlit? I'm holding three items that exist in the world for really no good reason. It's not a, you know, a classic soundtrack in the way we know soundtracks to be.
Yeah.
It's almost like maybe he just, you know, wanted to see these things exist in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I'm really glad he did, though.
And the rap's not even, by the way, folks, the rap's not on the record, the original record. It's not in the movie.
Not in the movie. No. So
it's its own friggin' thing. Oh, God.
It says here, inspired by the film, History of the World, Part 1.
Ooh, here's something.
Yeah.
What's one comedy movie you would like to do this to give the 45-minute treatment to, or the 40-minute treatment, let's say?
Very good question.
You feel you could do justice to? Because I'm sure you could, but I would love to know.
Well, I will tell you this, that I lived in New Jersey in this little small town. And my first real job was at the Video Movie House, which is only, you know, it's worth noting that one of our customers was Kevin Smith.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, he was a year older than me in high school, and I was the video store guy, okay? Mm-hmm. And he would come in and rent movies at our store. And I'm going off on a major tangent here. I'm sorry, but
fine, please.
About, you know, 2 years after high school, I ran into him at a coffee shop in our neighborhood. Eric, oh man, I was going to film school and I just dropped out, and I'm going to make a movie and I'm going to put it on my credit card, and it's about a video store clerk, and you have to audition for this movie. And I'm like, okay. And I just lamed out and totally chickened out. I asked my friend, like, how do you like audition for movies? And like, I just never did. The auditions were held at the local fire department, like firehouse.
Holy
like
shit.
He like got a room upstairs at the firehouse. I feel very confident that I could have gotten a role at least in his video store movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, but one of my pastimes at the video store was, we had a very comprehensive audiovisual
setup in the video store.
So we had, you know, a CD player, we had a tape player, we had a VCR, and it was all going through the same system.
Mm-hmm.
So, out of boredom, I would do this thing where I would take the tapes, put it in the VCR, fast forward to a random scene, hit record on the cassette player, hit play on the VCR, and just start recording whatever dialogue it was on whatever random movie I picked out. And then I would hit pause, go grab another one, fast forward, hit play, record. And I would fill up tapes and tapes of this in my downtime. It was like this weird art piece that I was getting into. And I would actually just drive around in my car and listen to this stuff.
Uh-huh.
But in the same sort of like spirit, I would just record movies.
Uh-huh.
The two that come to mind are Raising Arizona and Broadway Danny Rose.
Uh-huh.
And I would drive around in my car and listen to the movie.
Yeah.
So I would pick either one of those as wow. being a very, very fun listen to just hear the audio. Probably more Raising Arizona at this point.
People know my next question by now, but do those original tapes exist somewhere? The ones that you cut together, any of them?
I really don't know. I hope they do. I don't know where I would even look.
I want to hear one.
Yeah. There were a couple of really fun ones that, and it you know, as you can imagine, it yielded some really interesting results. You know, you've got like, you know, yeah, anyway.
That's amazing. That's brilliant. Now, I want you to tell people, well, first of all, people should listen to the Rarefied Air podcast because it should also be noted that none of the tech prowess is either mine or Josh's. Eric does a lot of work to make those things sound very, very good. Rarefiedairpodcast.com. But where can people find your work? I don't know if you're even on Twitter or anything, but where can people find you or your work?
Well, you can find me on Instagram, which is sort of my go-to social mm-hmm. media, under Eric Paparazzi, E-R-I-K-P-A-P-A-R-A-Z-Z-I.
Mm-hmm.
I am also on Twitter, but I just don't like the way it looks, so I hardly Fair. Ever check it. But you can, you know, see what's going on there. My main sort of day job is... I am the music director for the artist Cat Power.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on a normal year, I would have been at a theater near you out in the world somewhere. The last two years before the pandemic, I was pretty much everywhere,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, for a while. That keeps me really busy. So, you know, just, you know, you can sort of follow Cat Power's social media and see where she's going to be, and I'm usually right there with her.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. Eric, this is certainly a lot of fun. You're welcome back anytime. I'm sure we can find some, we may have to use it as an excuse to talk about Arthur. yeah, please, everybody check out Eric's work. Go check out some of the Rusicles are on YouTube. Check those out. They're friggin' insane. They're insane. and listen to the Rarefied Air podcast. Eric, thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason. This is a lot of fun.
And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years. Dress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn. Ah!